Back about 10 years ago when I was pastor at Beverly Drive United Methodist Church in Wichita Falls, Texas, I used to make trips back and forth between Dallas and Wichita Falls on a regular basis. They were long trips, and often at night, and that gets you out in the middle of nowhere. And when you go out in the middle of night, in the middle of nowhere, and you look up into the sky, you see something that you just can't see in the city. You see the glory of the universe above your head. You see the glory of God's creation above your head. And so I would take my 6-inch reflector telescope, and I would put it in my trunk, and as I'd make the trip, if it was a beautiful night and a clear crystal, kind of like, you know, tonight will be when there's not a cloud in the sky and it's crisp air and there's very little muck in the sky to affect the view, I'll pull off the highway, go off the road a short distance on a farm-to-market road, get out the telescope, set it up, calibrate it, and spend an hour or two searching the heavens, searching the glory of God's creation, zeroing in on a nebula, finding Mars or Jupiter and seeing how many moons of Jupiter I can see, or whether or not the rings of Saturn are at an angle so that we can see them, or are they more on edge so they look like a little razor blade. Seeing what I can see of the sky, of God's handiwork, of the beauty of creation. I would spend a couple of hours, and sometimes time would get away from me. And I can remember one Saturday night, time really got away from me, and I realized it was like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I had church I had to go to. So I had to take the telescope down and put it back in my trunk and make the rest of the trip back home in time for church. I used to love to make those trips because you could see so much out there in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes it would be like you're standing on an open field plain and you could see from horizon to horizon. And as you watched, you could see the whole sky slowly rotate. Kind of like when you go to a planetarium and you watch the sky and the dome above you rotate. When you read Genesis, you kind of get that image of the universe, that image of creation, that image of this world. It's really what the world looks like, standing on a field with the sky rotating above your head, with the stars, and you can tell what season of the year it is by those stars if you know how to read them. And you can tell where you are by those stars if you know how to read them. And with the moon and its beautiful phases, oh, the glory of God's creation. It's kind of what it looks like. When you read the book of Genesis, it's kind of what it looks like, standing on a field with the universe, a canopy, a dome over your heads. That's an essence where the story comes from. A description of the universe as seen standing in an open field. But more importantly, it's a description of God and God's creative genius. It's a description of who we are and why we are placed here and what our duties and responsibilities as God's representatives in this world. It's a description of who God is, who we are, and what we are called to do and be. So I want to take a look today at the creation account, what's often called the first creation account in Genesis chapter 1, and go beyond what we read and simply look at what we can learn about God from the way creation is talked about in chapter 1. Now, firstly, chapter 1's creation account and the account in chapter 2 are very different. Very different indeed. Chapter 1 is interested in process, in structure, in philosophical concerns. Chapter 2 is much simpler, more folksy. Chapter 1 places human beings as the penultimate of creation, whereas chapter 2 places us at the beginning of the creative events. It's a different perspective between the two. Today I want to look at one with a periodic reference to number 2. Let's look at the beginning of it, though. The beginning of the beginning of the beginning. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, The earth was formless, void. Earth was a meshy, mussy mess. The earth was an absolute, disorganized, mucky mess. The earth was like my bedroom when I was 6 years old. The earth was an absolute, mucky, mushy, watery, sloshy mess. The earth was form and void, and darkness, gloominess, mysteriousness. Darkness covered, rested, laid over the deep. The Hebrew people always assigned the mysteries to the deep. In other words, the universe in its initial stages was a big, formless, mushy mass of darkness. Ugh. Except for this. While a wind, the breath, the Spirit of God flutters, sweeps over the surface of the waters. The word here for wind in Hebrew is ruach. You can't say it without breathing really hard. Ruach. And it means spirit, it means breath, it means wind. When the scriptures talk about the Spirit of God, it uses the word ruach. When the scripture speaks about wind blowing, it uses the word ruach. When the scripture speaks about the breath of God, God breathing into the earth creature and the earth creature becoming a living soul, it uses the word ruach for breathing in. It's as if God's breath, God's wind, God's spirit blows across the surface, the glassy surface of the water, creating ripples in the mucky, mushy mess. That's the image here. Quiet. Nothing. And then, and you see the ripples on the surface. And in the midst of that ripple, you hear, "Let there be light." Literally in Hebrew, "Light be." It's a command, the imperative. Let there be light. Light become. Come into existence. Spark alive. Flood the universe with light. What was dark is now brightened. What was covered in deep darkness is now revealed in bright light. Light be. Light become. And God saw the light that it was good. But God didn't want it just to be light. He also wanted there to be light and dark. So God said, "Let there be separation between light and dark." And the night light God calls day, and the darkness God calls night. Is there a sun? No. There are no stars. There's no sun. But there's still light, and there's still dark. There's still day. There's still night. I have friends in certain churches who have a literal understanding of Scripture. And I often ask them, how can there be a day and a night without a star that we're orbiting to define those differences? They don't like me when I ask questions like that. So God begins by breathing, by commanding light to be, and then by dividing light from darkness in day one. That's another question. How could it be day one? Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate waters from waters. A dome, the sky, the firmament, as the King James says. God separates, places a big hole in the middle of the big, mushy, mucky, lit mess, and separates waters below from waters above. So it's like a gap has been created now in the midst of the mucky, mushy, watery mess. That was day two. Then God said, let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let dry land appear. Here God creates land. Having divided light from dark, having divided waters above from waters below, now God divides the waters here into land and sea. Have you already seen something? It's a progression from simpler to more complex, from basic to more intricate, with divisions and separations and the development of structure. Then God adds life, plant life, on the land. God adds vegetation, plants to the earth. That was day three. And God said, let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. That's the sun and the moon. So the stars, the planets, the sun and the moon are set in the dome to provide light, to tell seasons and time and years, to tell day from day to day. So in the process of creation, we have greater divisions, greater intricacies, and when it becomes time to need to know the seasons, because you've got vegetation on the land, God adds the stars to tell those seasons and the sun to give light for the day. So there was general light, and now there's a specific light. Continual process of intricate development here. That was day four. Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky. So God created the great sea monsters, and every living creature that moves, of every kind with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. So now God creates life in the seas, living creatures in the waters. Before it was created on land, God creates it in the waters. Again, from simpler to more complex. Keeps going. That was day five. Now day six. Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things and wild animals of the earth, of every kind. And it was so. Then God said, let us make humankind. The word here in Hebrew is Adam, and it's a play on the word for dirt. Earth creature, earthling, earthy, dirty, pig pen, no. But yes, my mother used to say that I was a whole lot like Adam, because if she wanted to find some dirt, she could always find it behind my ears. Earthy, earth creature, Adam. It's our species name. Humankind. Let us make humankind. Notice the pronoun. Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created Adam in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And then God said, it was good. God said that at every stage. Let there be light, and it was good. Let there be a firmament, and it was good. Let the waters be divided, and it was good. Let the land come forth, and it was good. Let there be vegetation, and it was good. Let there be life in the seas, and it was good. Let there be life on land, and it was good. Let there be human beings, and they are good. They are very good. What does all of this tell us about God? I want to start with that statement right there about being good. Firstly, it tells us that God doesn't create junk. God doesn't make mistakes or create junk. I counseled someone this week and I asked them if I could tell this and they said yes. I counseled someone this week in our congregation who told me that they felt as though they were worthless and God had made a mistake and they were just junk. And I said, no. God doesn't make junk. God doesn't deal in junk. God makes good, beautiful people. God makes good, beautiful creations. God doesn't make junk. We make junks of ourselves. God doesn't make junk. This tells us also that God creates with purpose and intention. The universe is the result of a purposeful, intentful, creative process. One that follows a progression from simpler to more complex. One that includes the development of structures that govern and oversee the functioning of that creation. We call those natural laws, principles. They're clearly evident in this story of creation. The Hebrew people looked at the universe, they described it a certain way, and we think, ah, heck, they don't know what they're talking about. We've been to the moon, we've sent probes to Mars and to Jupiter, and we got one flying to Pluto right now, but what did they know? Well, they described it as they saw it, and then described God as they saw and encountered God, and described through this creation process the character of God and the character of that creation. God creates intentionally with purpose, creating structure that can be understood. And that's interesting. The Hebrew people lived in a world where the universe was viewed as a chaotic mess, kind of like it was before God said, "Let there be light." They lived in a world where the universe was the result of battles between deities up in the sky. The universe itself is the result of battles and, in fact, is the carcass of a chopped-up deity from a sky battle. The moon and the sun were deities. The wind, the waves were deities. The creatures in the sea were deities. Animals on the land were deities. The Hebrew people looked at the universe and didn't see various gods and goddesses. The Hebrew people looked at the universe and saw the handiwork of God. The handiwork of God that could be understood, classified. All this talk here of types and kinds. Understood and classified. Comprehended and described. It's the nucleus, the beginning, the very beginning of thinking about the universe scientifically. It doesn't matter that the conclusions were wrong or poorly described or described from a simpler way of looking at the universe. That doesn't matter. It's the process of looking at the universe as a created thing that can be understood and classified and described that's at work here. God created the universe with purpose and intent, with structure and order, to give us a place to live and to represent God. And we are created to do that. It says to have dominion over the fish and over the land, creatures, to have a place of position to represent God and to bear the image of God. So we can learn from Genesis about God's nature. God's nature is to create. God's nature is to create good things. God's nature is to create the universe with an order and structure that can be understood and comprehended and described. And God creates us to represent God to the universe by having dominion over it, to take care of it. As the second creation account describes us, we are gardeners placed in the Garden of Eden to tend it, to take care of it, to nurture it, to become, in a sense, a co-creator with God, improving on that which is good that God has created by tending it in the garden. So we learn about God's nature as creator of good things. We learn about ourselves as the product, the good product of that creation. And we learn that God is a God of order and structure, harmony and meaning. You mean you don't believe that God created the earth in 6 days, literal days, 24-hour days? No. You mean you believe that the universe has an order and structure that can be discerned from it? Yes, I do. Well, does that mean you believe in evolution? Ever look at a Chihuahua and a Basset Hound? They're two animals of the same species, but they don't look it, because human beings have bred them that way and literally created them through the processes that we sometimes describe and call evolutionary. I believe that God utilizes those same processes in developing the diversity of kinds and types that we see articulated here in the story in Genesis chapter 1. I don't see a war and a conflict. I do see God's handiwork, God's fingerprints, if you will, to use a human metaphor, all over it. I can't go out in the night and set up my telescope and look up at the sky without being overwhelmed at the beauty, order, structure, and glory of God's creation. And we are called as the children of God to tend that creation, to take care of it, to advance it for the good of all. As we move in and through 2009, may we engage in acts of conservation and tending of the garden and protection of the garden that we've been given. May we act as co-creators with God, creating structure and order and meaning for ourselves and for others. May we participate in God's creation by advancing it for the good of all, for expressing the goodness that God said was there when God said it was good to all. May we reflect the creative love of God to all. May we reflect that love which became known to us in Jesus Christ, who came in this world to be among us and with us, to show us the order, glory, and majesty of God, and then give himself for us. May we share that love with others this year. May we share the creative love of God. And God said, "It is good."
You have been listening to a sermon by Dr. Gregory Neal, Senior Pastor of St. Stephen United Methodist Church and Rector of Grace Incarnate Ministries.
Copyright 2009 by Dr. Gregory S. Neal. All rights reserved.
For more information or to listen to other sermons by Dr. Neal, visit us on the web at www.revneal.org. That's www.revneal.org. You are also invited to visit us in person at St. Stephen United Methodist Church, 2520 Oates Drive, Mesquite, Texas, 75150. This program was produced by Dr. Greg Neal.